Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news.
To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the mouth,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me this week because we have a lot to get to. The NBA season just around the corner. Training camps are in full swing. To that end, we'll check in with Tim Bontemps, the senior NBA writer over at the Washington Post. Tim and I will talk about the Lakers, the early returns there. Boston, a little bit sluggish in the preseason. And Kevin Durant, still talking a little bit about his upcoming free agency. A little bit later on, Joe Vardon, now with The Athletic, longtime writer for Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer. He and I talk about the Cavs' next step in the post-LeBron era, what the atmosphere is like there, why Kevin Love decided to come back, and why Cleveland decided to extend Kevin Love. All that and more with Tim Bontemps and Joe Vardon. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me now on the podcast, you've heard him here before. You can read his stuff in the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter at Tim Bontemps. He is Tim Bontemps, the senior national NBA writer over at the Washington Post. What's up, Tim?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. Lot to get to. Season just about 2 weeks away, a little less than 2 weeks away, a little more maybe than 2 weeks away. Exhibition games in full swing. So before we get to stuff we've seen in the first week or so of training camp, the NBA GM survey, it just came out on Wednesday, and this is effectively a survey of the 30 GMs asking their opinions on a variety of topics. The top line item, though, Tim, is that the NBA GMs, not by an overwhelming number, but the NBA GMs believe that LeBron James is the front runner to win the MVP next season. Now, that's interesting to me because no matter how high you are on the Lakers, you don't believe they're more than like a 4 or 5 seed, maybe a few 3 seeds kind of in that mix. And, usually the MVP, as it's been in many years past, is reserved for a player on the best or second best team in their respective conference. I know Russell Westbrook won it a few years back or a couple years back. He was not on a great team, but this was interesting to me, Tim, that the GMs believe that LeBron James is the favorite to win MVP. What did you make of that?
I mean, to me, I make of this two things. One, as I look at it, there are 9 guys who got votes. LeBron, Durant, Anthony Davis, James Harden, Giannis, Steph Curry, Kyrie, Kawhi, and Russell Westbrook. To me, what this says more than anything is that there's not a clear favorite for this award. And so people defaulted to the best player in the league. I think if you look, generally when you come into the season, there are a couple guys who kind of have a clear head start from a narrative perspective for the MVP, right? Like last year, James Harden had finished 2nd 2 out of the previous 3 years. You know, if the Rockets are really good, he was going to be in prime position, and the Rockets are really good, and he won, right? There isn't really a guy like that this year. And I think, to your point, I don't think the Lakers are going to be very good. At least compared to what a lot of people think. But if LeBron does get them to say home court advantage in the West in the first round, he probably will win MVP. I don't think that will happen. I think the fact you had 9 guys each get, it looks like somewhere between, 1 and maybe, 8 or 9 votes on this poll. I think that really underscores the fact that the race for MVP this year is about as wide open as it's ever been before.
You know, people, and I know social media is not necessarily a reflection of opinions at large, but I've found, Tim, that people are so offended by the notion or the suggestion, I guess, that the Lakers aren't going to be very good. I don't know if you get that same type of feedback when you say or write stuff like that, but I don't really understand it. I mean, LeBron is a great player. Let me put it this way. LeBron is a great offensive player and a great defensive player when he wants to be, which last year wasn't all that frequently. But, you know, right. On that team, I mean, I don't know how you look at them and be, at the very least, I don't know how you look at them and be certain that they're going to be a good team. That eludes me.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that I think they're going to miss the playoffs, and I've gotten a lot of scorn and ridicule for that. And I mean, listen, I think obviously LeBron James is the best player in the league, and he's one of the best players of all time, and that he might be enough to drag him into the playoffs by himself in the brutal Western Conference. However, they have very few good defensive players. I think you can argue they have one plus defensive player on their whole team, and that's Josh Hart, who may not even start. They don't have very much shooting. They have a lot of guys who need to have the ball in their hands when LeBron James is probably the best player in the league with the ball in his hands and should have it all the time. They have a weird mix of veterans that, you know, I'm not really sure how that's going to go. And they also have no competent big men on the roster. I mean, I was at in LA. I was at the preseason game last night against the Nuggets. And in these first two games, they've trotted out Kyle Kuzma as their backup center. Kyle Kuzma, who's like 6'8 and 200 pounds. And they tried to play him against Nikola Jokic in both these first two games. And Jokic has just, you know, turned him into barbecue chicken, as Shaq always liked to say. Like, I just don't, their roster just doesn't make a lot of sense. And listen, I'm not saying that I think they're going to win 30 games. I think they're probably going to win somewhere in the mid 40s. And in the West, where I think you're going to have to get close to 50 to get in, I don't think that's going to be enough. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the fact that people act indignant if you say that to me, I think it just ignores the myriad problems that this Laker roster has, even though they have LeBron on it. I mean, to me, last year's Cavs were a more talented team that made more sense from a roster building standpoint. And they won 50 games with LeBron playing all 82 games in the Eastern Conference. I don't think LeBron's going to play all 82 games. They're not in the East, and their roster doesn't make as much sense. So, you know, I'm sure they're going to be decent, and they've got some young guys that can take steps forward, but there's an awful lot that the Lakers have to figure out. And you know, they're going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch in the league, I think, this season, just because I have no idea what they're going to look like on a nightly basis.
Okay, so you saw them play against Denver, and the one thing that I took away from my time out in L.A. was that the Lakers, they want to play fast. Everything's going to be up-tempo. They want to run, take advantage of all their athleticism, and be that type of team. Well, you can't right. be that type of team if you don't get if you're consistently taking the ball out of the basket. And in the first two preseason games, and I say this with the caveat that the preseason is not a reflection of what you're going to see necessarily in the regular season, but they gave up, what, 46% from the floor in game one, 47%+ from the floor in game two. You're not going to win any games, much less games in the Western Conference, consistently giving up that type of numbers on the defensive end.
No question. I mean, and the other thing is they're not going to rebound well. You look at their team, like JaVale is not a great rebounder at center. You go down the roster, probably the only plus defender they probably have is Josh Hart, and maybe Lonzo if he's healthy. The only plus rebounders they have at any position are you know, LeBron is kind of wherever he's going to get his boards. But the only other one is probably Rondo and Lonzo at point guard. You know, if they're playing Kyle Kuzma at center, they're not going to get any rebounds. They're playing Brandon Ingram at, you know, either small or power forward, they're probably not going to get a ton of rebounds. You know, it's just a roster that has a lot of holes. I mean, if you had just taken the money, if they just not signed Michael Beasley and not signed JaVale and signed Brook Lopez and Channing Frye, I would feel infinitely better about the Lakers' chances of making the playoffs. But they didn't do that. And they have, you know, they have JaVale and Ivica Zubac, who does not look like he's going to be a big contributor at all, and Mo Wagner, the first-round pick, who's hurt. with an injury he had back in July. So, I mean, it's going to be really interesting because they've got a team that, you know, is set up to that people think, you know, some people have claimed they're going to make the conference finals and everybody's sure they're going to make the playoffs. And I mean, they've got some real structural flaws that, you know, if they don't make a trade, which I think they're going to be very hesitant to do with their young guys, you know, they're going to have a tough time sorting through as the year plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more convinced than ever that this Laker team is going to get off to a slow start, and then they're going to have to rely on LeBron and what he can do to help dig them out of a hole come Christmas time. I don't think they can dig themselves up and out enough to get into the playoffs in the Western Conference. All right. On the other side of the bracket, you got Boston. And, you know, speaking of that GM survey, Brad Stevens, voted by the executives as the best coach in the NBA. He ends Greg Popovich's run of 7 straight years of winning that distinction. Now, Brad Stevens has not been pleased, Tim, of what he's seen in the first couple of games with the Boston Celtics. He said after the loss to Cleveland, the Celtics are not as good as advertised. He said he couldn't be more unimpressed with the Celtics so far this preseason. Now, I'm less concerned about what Boston's going to be because, look, Kyrie Irving didn't play against Cleveland in the second exhibition game. You've got Gordon Hayward out there who looks like he's going to need months, not weeks, but months to get back into game shape. I watch him, Tim, and his legs look heavy. He's just sort of, he doesn't look in sync at all out there on the floor. It's going to take him a long time to reintegrate himself with this group. But to me, this group is far too talented to not get off to a fast start and immediately seize control of the Eastern Conference. What do you think about Boston so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, they have a ton of talent, and it's going to take some time for them to sort all through all of this, right? I mean, you mentioned Gordon Hayward. He placed 5 minutes last year. I think, I'm pretty sure you were at that game in Cleveland. I know I was. I will never forget watching his leg turn the opposite direction. You know, that's a lot to come back from, and it's going to take him some time to get back into game shape and game game readiness from a mental standpoint, both from, you know, just being able to take contact. He did have that nice chase down block that he fell down and kind of got up and went right back down the court the other day, which I thought was a good sign for him. But it's just going to take them some time to figure this all out. I mean, they have so much talent and they have so many guys that they have to try to play that, you know, it's going to take Brad some time to figure out where everybody's roles need to be. It's going to take time to, get guys like Terry Rozier adjusted back to the fact that they're not the center of attention. That's something I'm really curious to see how it plays out. I mean, you know, Kyrie is going to play 32, 33 minutes a game, and, you know, all their other starters are probably going to. So, you know, Terry Rozier's got his own shoe line now with Puma. He's got the Scary Terry gear. All this stuff. He's become this kind of local star after the way he played in the playoffs. Deservedly, he was really good. How's he going to feel going back and playing 20 minutes a game? How's Marcus Smart going to feel about that? How's Marcus Morris in a contract year going to feel about that? I mean, they have a lot of stuff to sort out. Now, they have a great problem to have because they have just a ridiculous amount of talent. And Brad's a great coach, and I think they'll figure it out. But, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, it's the preseason. So to your point before about the Lakers, it's hard to get too wound up about anything you see other than coaches like to get upset. But, I think once they get into the regular season and they kind of everybody gets settled into the roles they're going to have on this team, it's hard to see them not taking off because they just have too much talent not to.
Yeah, one of my takeaways from watching them and being around them for the last week or so is that it seems like they're going to figure out the whole starting thing by, you know, basically starting the five guys, like their quasi death lineup out there with Al Horford at the five. And then immediately, you know, within like 3 or 4 minutes, get Aaron Baines into the game. I think they'll appease some of the guys that are used to being starters by putting them in that starting lineup, and then very quickly, whether it's for Brown or Horford, whomever, they're going to get Aaron Baines into the game. Now, maybe they'll mix it up every so often with Baines getting the start against I don't know, like a Joel Embiid or Andre Drummond or somebody else that you don't want to put Horford.
I was going to say, how many teams do they have to rush Baines into the game against? I mean, there's some that they do, but I mean, it's not like Horford can't guard most of these guys without much trouble.
You're right. I think for Horford, though, he's been very public in the past about not wanting to be a five for too much. Just doesn't want the wear and tear on his body there. So you're right. If it's a really small lineup, but take the game against the Cavs on Tuesday night. I mean, Horford doesn't want to bang with Tristan Thompson for that long. That's just not, I mean, he rarely has success when he actually has to do it. So I think they're going to go that route. And look, it's an interesting route. I mean, I thought they'd probably have a conversation or might have a conversation with Jaylen Brown about coming off the bench, being a great sixth man and building from that. But it seems like they're going to put their best offensive players in that starting lineup and see what comes of it. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, look, it's like I said before, they've got a lot of stuff to sort out from that standpoint, right? I mean, it's a great problem to have, but when you have a lot of talented players, you have to figure out how to play them all. And that's not as easy as just rolling the ball out, right? I mean, you mentioned Horford not wanting to play center. I'm sure Jaylen Brown, a young guy trying to establish himself as a big-time player in the league, doesn't want to come off the bench. I mentioned the Terry Rozier situation. I think that could get pretty messy. I mean, he's going to be a restricted free agent next summer. You know, he wants to put up numbers. You know, he wants to get a big contract. How's he going to handle being a bit player? How's Marcus Morris, a guy who, as you know, is certainly never shy about sharing his opinion. He's in his contract year. How is he going to feel about being a 15 to 20 minute a night player? How are the star players, Kyrie and Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward and Horford? I mean, Horford's not a guy who worries about shots, but how are those guys going to distribute shots? Is there going to be issues with that? I mean, again, these are all great problems to have if you're a team. You want to have so much talent that you have to sort things out, you know. But if you're the Celtics, there are some hurdles that they have to overcome in terms of figuring out how to put this all together because – you know, it's not as easy as you just roll the ball out there and you get started, right? Because to your point, Al Horford doesn't like to play center. Jaylen Brown doesn't want to come off the bench. Terry Rozier is going to want shots. Marcus Morris is going to want shots. Everybody's going to want more minutes than they can get. So that's where you pay your coach money, right? You pay Brad Stevens big bucks to figure out the right way to navigate through that and make sure everybody's happy and on the same page and everybody is pulling in the right direction. And you know, that's what this time right now is for, is to figure that stuff out. And to your point, probably the first few weeks of the regular season will be in a similar vein because these guys are going to, you know, need some time to kind of slowly develop into what they're going to be.
Yeah, and I think they'll benefit from just the horribleness of the bottom of the Eastern Conference. I mean, there are like five good teams in the East at the top. I mean, Philly's good, Milwaukee's good. Obviously Toronto's good as well, but you know, you get to the bottom half of the playoff bracket, it's okay at best, and then you get outside there and it's just terrible. So, you know, if the Celtics have any kind of transition issues as they bring Hayward and Kyrie back, it's going to be eased by the fact they'll get Atlanta and Brooklyn and New York and just all these teams, Orlando, that are at the bottom.
Chicago.
I mean, you just go down the list. It's not a very good conference once you get outside of that top five. All right, let me ask you lastly about Golden State. You're out there in Oakland. You see them pretty regularly. One of the subplots of this season is going to be Kevin Durant's upcoming free agency. And Durant has decided effectively that he's going to be pretty forthright when asked about it. He's not going to shut down, you know, questions about it. He told reporters his plan was to just be honest about this. I mean, he said he was honest with his decision, but just like outwardly, if people ask me about it, don't be ashamed to talk about why I decided to move teams and switch teams, because it's not the end of the world. So this is his kind of plan to not hold back, I guess, when asked certain questions about it. What do you make of that? And, you know, being around that team, does that have the potential to be at all an issue in that locker room?
Well, I mean, listen, I was at Media Day last Monday, and, you know, to me, you know, the last line of my column was that it felt like the beginning of a long goodbye. And it feels like this is the last ride for this team. You know, Kevin is a guy who is prone to changing his mind, and he could change his mind. But I think if you, I think you would agree with me that if you poll people around the league right now, a lot more people think he's going to the Knicks and then maybe to one of the LA teams before he's going to stay with the Warriors. You know, and I think he's perfectly within his right to do that. I think they're probably going to win a third straight title. He's probably going to win a third straight MVP. I could see him looking around at that point and going, what else do I need to do here? I can go do something somewhere else. And, you know, in particular in New York, if he goes to New York and somehow gets that Knicks team, you know, back into contention, let alone, you know, somehow ending the title drop they've had for close to five decades. I mean, that's a forever play from a legacy standpoint. I mean, the next person who gets that title for the Knicks is going to have about seven statues in the borough of Manhattan. So, well, look, I think, you know, Kevin can't really help himself but be honest. You know, one of his best qualities, he's just a really nice guy. And I think that this is going to be a interesting year because, you know, last year from day one, the Warriors talked about how hard it was and how hard it was going to be to repeat. And they really slogged through the season and really, frankly, never got out of second gear, even in the Western Conference Finals. They were kind of always just going at like 60%, and they never could get going past that. And they've actively tried to change that. They're trying to have fun. They're trying to talk about, you know, enjoying this process. And I think part of that is the recognition that they really have no idea if Kevin's going to come back or not. And rather than worrying about it, they're just going to enjoy the year and try to win another title and then figure it out and hope that it'll stay. So, you know, they've got the DeMarcus thing kind of hanging out there as something they can start to integrate later. But otherwise, I mean, it's really just a matter of trying to get their guys through the season healthy and get to April with everybody ready to go and then see what happens when the playoffs start. But, you know, there's no question that Kevin's future is going to hang over everything. And, you know, like I said, if you ask me right now, I think, you know, everybody I talk to in the league, plus the sense I just get, I think it's more likely than not he's playing in another uniform next season.
You know, and along those lines, I've been really surprised at how many people are, you know, NBA types that I talk to on a regular basis are convinced it's going to be New York. I mean, there are a lot of people, Tim, that believe the Knicks are a prohibitive favorite to land Durant.
Yep.
Now there's, I mean, there's lots of reasons for it. I mean, the Knicks are trying to look functional. They'll clearly have the cap space. You got Porzingis, you know, maybe Kevin Knox. And of course, as you said, the legacy play of winning a championship in New York. But, you know, when I talk to people about the possibilities, it's oftentimes just New York and then everybody else is kind of competing for second place there.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like I said, I mean, that's where I would say it's probably at too. I mean, I think he could come down to LA and maybe play for the Clippers. I don't see him joining up with LeBron after joining up with the Warriors, but I mean, I guess that's also possible. But I think, you know, he's going to be either in New York, LA, or San Francisco next year, I would say. And if I had to pick, I would say New York. I mean, his business partner, Rich Kleiman, is a New Yorker. And, you know, like I said, for Kevin, it really would be, you know, it'd be kind of like this LeBron move to LA, except that, you know, there would just be immense upside. Because again, if you could win a title in New York, I mean, as somebody who lived there for a long time, as you did, like, I mean, the Knicks are the number one team in New York by leaps and bounds in terms of fandom. I mean, there's just way more Knicks fans than everybody else. And if somebody can go there and do that, I mean, it will be a, you know, a lifetime, it'll be a lifetime thing. I mean, you look, the teams from the 70s are having books written about them every two or three years at this point. And they're a team that, you know, won a title in 1973, you know? So, I mean, there's just an immense upside there, for Durant or for some other star. And look, the other thing too, you know, the Knicks are going to have the ability, they'd have to do some work. They can get another guy there. So, you know, could Durant team up with his boy Kyrie Irving in New York? Could he get, you know, Jimmy Butler or some other guy to go to New York? Maybe. And then, like you said, they have Porzingis, they have Knox, they have all these guys. So, you know, they're going to be, it's going to be very interesting to watch that play out this year and see how it goes. And, you know, I think Golden State, you know, wasn't sure what Kevin would have done if they'd have lost to Houston last year. If they'd lost that game seven in Houston, would he be back? I don't think they know for sure. I mean, look, it's going to be a really interesting season. Kevin can't help but be honest. If he's going to actually talk about it, my guess is at some point he stops. But until he does, there's going to be a lot of stuff said. And, you know, his trips around the league will be interesting. And it will be a very interesting subplot to what should be a rather interesting season in Oakland, not only because of the whole DeMarcus thing, but because I think everybody up there is kind of thinking this might be the end of this current iteration of the team.
Let me finish with this, because you bring up LeBron and, you know, the cap space the Lakers have, everybody kind of knows about. Do you read anything into the fact that as we kind of hear the chatter about, you know, where guys might go, we're not really hearing, at least I'm not really hearing, a lot about who might go to the Lakers. I mean, you got Kawhi connected to the Clippers if he decides to leave Toronto. You know, Jimmy Butler, you know, had a list he put together. The Lakers were not on that list, at least it's not as far as I know at this point. Durant, I'm with you. I don't think he goes down and plays with LeBron. Do you read anything into the fact that we're not hearing, you know, the top-tier guys talking about, or at least rumors that they're going to play for the Lakers?
I took the Jimmy thing, and maybe I'm wrong, I took that more as like they literally can't trade for him right now because of their salary structure. Like, I think even if they, like, if they put Lonzo and Ingram and I think Kuzma, they might have had to trade like all four young guys in the same trade to make that happen, right? So, like, I just think financially, I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe he doesn't want to play with LeBron, but I think financially, I just don't think they could have really pulled it off. And obviously, they're not going to trade every young guy on their team for Jimmy Butler. So, look, the Lakers situation to me is very, very interesting long term. I was talking to a scout about it last night. You mentioned Kawhi. The heavy favorite does seem to be the Clippers. I think he looks at himself as kind of LeBron's equal, not somebody who wants to go like be LeBron's sidekick. So I don't know how interested he is in playing with LeBron. I think the dream scenario for them would be they get Klay Thompson, right? I mean, his dad works for the Lakers, was a Laker, is obviously very tight with Luke Walton, but I cannot see a scenario that Klay Thompson is not going to get a mask to stay with Golden State. He really wants to stay. And I especially if Kevin might leave, I don't see why Golden State wouldn't do that. So, then he stays there. A lot of teams are nervous about paying Jimmy Butler a 4 or 5 year deal, given the amount of injuries he's had. I love him as a player, but he's missed 15 games, four out of the last 5 years, had knee surgery last year. He's going to be 31 at the start of his deal. I mean, there's a lot of potential red flags there. You run down the, Kevin Love was a guy who could have been a free agent. He stayed in Cleveland. You could have a guy like Kemba Walker maybe on the market, but is that really going to be a huge difference maker? You look around and there's, you know, if guys start to check off the list, all of a sudden you might be down to DeMarcus and Kemba Walker as the best options to play with LeBron. And those are really good players, in theory, assuming DeMarcus comes back healthy. But it's not the same kind of thing as like, oh, yeah, Kawhi Leonard will be a Laker. And again, Paul George could have been on the Lakers right now, and the Lakers didn't trade for him. And Kawhi Leonard probably could have been a Laker right now, and they didn't trade for him. So, you know, it's one thing to have these young guys and have them develop into stars, right? It's another thing if these young guys develop into nice players or solid players and you don't get stars. And the Lakers are starting to get perilously close to the latter. And, look, there's still plenty of time for those guys to blossom. And, you know, if I'm wrong about the Lakers this year, it's because Brandon Ingram becomes a really, really good player. And maybe he will. But they've put all their eggs in the, we're going to grow the young guys basket. And that's fine. But if you grow the young guys and you can't get any stars to play with LeBron, you damn well better have the young guys grow into stars. Because if they don't, the people who didn't make those trades are going to be out on the street at some point.
Yeah, should be interesting. Interesting year for the Lakers for a lot of reasons. Tim, always appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
Anytime, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, guy's been very busy over the last 4 or 5 years, Joe Vard, now of The Athletic. Does that make Jason Lloyd your boss?
Boy, isn't that awkward. But yes, one of many bosses, many cooks in the kitchen. But yeah, so I have to ask him for permission for stuff. How about that?
Just before we get into it, I mean, a lot of people going to The Athletic. What was the motives for you?
Well, for me, it's a couple of things. I mean, it's a growing company. Obviously, it's been a great place to work. Everybody who goes there seems to love it, and so far I have. They offered me a chance to go just beyond covering the Cavs. So I am based in Cleveland. I'm here in Boston with you this morning because the Cavs are here. It's true. But they gave me a title of senior NBA writer, and I've been able already to contribute to some national coverage and will continue to do that. And that was something that was important to me, having spent the last 4 years on this beat here with the Plain Dealer. And, you know, frankly, LeBron is gone. And so that job changed, and I was interested in trying to, you know, keep myself out there or put myself out there even more from a national perspective. And then just again, just this idea of the job in Cleveland with the Plain Dealer, it changed. You mentioned Jason's my boss now. I mean, for listeners who don't know, he and I had covered this beat together for 4 years. He was with the Beacon Journal and then the Athletic. And Dave McMenamin was here too, and he's now in LA with ESPN. And I don't know. I just, especially, and then with LeBron being gone, it would have been, I think, hard for me to have come back to the same job, doing the same thing, but without basically my friends. So this, The Athletic gave me a chance to stay out there, stay involved with the Cavs, do some different things as well, and so far it's been great.
McMenamin just bailed on you, huh?
He did. He's such a weenie with, you know, he can't take a little snow. So,
do you think he would have gone with LeBron to, like, Toronto?
Oh, wow. yeah, I mean, it's funny you mention that because I think at one point Toronto was kind of a dark horse there. I think there was some sniffing around on both ends. I don't know, he certainly would have gone to Philly. He's from there. Toronto, I mean, that's a city that grows on you in a hurry. But he couldn't be happier. He's with the Lakers before all this, so he's back and, you know, already got a place to live. And
I saw him on LA. Seems quite happy.
Yeah, he's smiling more, which is annoying.
Being around this team though for the first week, I mean, I would imagine decidedly different vibe here.
Yeah, we could spend the whole time talking about that. It's much quieter. This is coming from the PR staff, but it's true. Whereas for the last 4 years, you'd show up to work every day almost knowing what the story was or who was going to generate it. It was more of like kind of, you know, standing under the news and catching it. Now, when you come to work, you are going to find the story. I think there's actually a lot more room to develop and pursue an angle, just because there isn't anything that's really obvious. You know, the Cavs don't really have any news generators, and especially this being camp, it's been very quiet.
As you look back now, do you look at it? It was a foregone conclusion that LeBron was going to go. That there really wasn't a courtship or any kind of significant chance he was coming back.
Probably, you know, they thought as early as after the 2016 championship that something like this might happen. And then Kyrie getting away the way that he did, I think really kind of lifted any last barrier or hurdle that LeBron might have had. And I actually think then playing the way he did and kind of dragging the Cavs back to the finals one more time was really admirable, I think, because his mind probably was made up that he was going to go where he went. And, you know, he went through a lot of stuff last year to kind of make that happen. So, yeah, I thought maybe he felt like it was his senior year in Cleveland and he wanted to make the most of it.
Did you see an evolution in him? Because in 2014, he comes back. And, you know, there's that letter, and certainly from the SI letter, it seemed like he was coming to Cleveland to finish his career. I mean, did you see an evolution in kind of the thinking of him over the last 4 years?
You know, I've thought a lot about this, Chris. And I, we should mention, although, you know, I'm hoping I get to have the chance to do this, but LeBron actually still has not been asked why he left Cleveland. Mm-hmm. It's been LA. And maybe it's obvious, you know, the weather's better. His business empire is there. Savannah loves it there. They've got currently two beautiful homes in the same neighborhood. It's just everybody gets it. Like, it's cool to be a Laker. He's talking about how cool it is to be a Laker. So he hasn't really been asked yet. Well, wait a minute. 4 years ago, you did say that this was it. You know, he said it in his letter. He said it to Rachel Nichols. He said it to us. That he had been out there saying he was going to stay in Cleveland. And so what is it that changed? And I think it's a number of factors, from maybe having more success than he thought they would have originally as part of it. I think part of the NBA culture of, like, being a star and a free agent is, like, the coolest thing. And I actually think that the perpetual will he or won't he that, you know, that was here, not just this summer, but the summer before, I think he bought into that. And then again, just the opportunity that presented itself in Los Angeles, where I think he wanted to be long term. I think that all added up for him.
A couple of the guys that are still here, Ty Lue, who, you know, had his, you know, a physical reaction to coaching LeBron James. Yeah. I mean, last year was brutal for him health wise. What's he been like, you know, during this first week? And do you think that, you know, Ty is in this for kind of the long haul in Cleveland?
I'm not sure still. I think Ty was excited about the chance and the opportunity to just have more of his stamp on the team. And then I think as he's gotten into camp, I still don't think he feels great. And then also just sort of the things that pop up being a coach, you know, looking at, you know, his view of how this should work in terms of rotation versus the front office. I think there's some questions there that are beginning to come out. And then just the realization that LeBron isn't here, and while that relieves a lot of the pressure, that also, like, creates some problems. Mm-hmm. Like, where are you going to find those 28 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists? So I'm not sure how this is going to go. You know, for him, I hope it goes well. There's a lot of people in his corner who say he's a great coach. He gets a chance, really, I think, to prove that this year.
You know, when LeBron goes, your immediate reaction is, all right, they'll go into some kind of rebuild. They'll, you know, jettison their big contracts. They turn around and give Kevin Love, in his 30s now, a long-term extension. What did you make of that decision?
So, I like it. I liked it for a couple of reasons. You know, in the moment, I mean, sort of just what you mentioned, that LeBron leaves, so then you start talking about a rebuild. And the people of Cleveland, of course, had been through that once, and it was a unmitigated disaster saved only by LeBron coming back. And so for the fans, and even selfishly, just knowing you're going to have to be around this team yourself, you don't want to face the prospect of, like, the desert, right? So you felt like them locking up Kevin was the strongest step yet that they're going to try to avoid that. But from a business perspective, I do think it made a lot of sense because it took pressure off of having to do something with Kevin. He was entering the last year of his deal, and the one thing that could not happen was they could not have let him go for nothing. So they couldn't hold on to him and let him walk as a free agent, but they said they were trying to make the playoffs. And then if that wasn't going to work out and they started to play poorly, teams around the league would know that he was about to be a free agent. And so if they wanted him, whatever trade they would have tried to make with the Cavs would have been for less, you know, less than what he was worth. So now the Cavs are in a situation where they absolutely do not have to trade him. Mm-hmm. If they want to tank this year, they could sit him down. They could play him every other night, whatever. They don't have to trade him. And then if they do decide to trade him, because he's locked into this long-term deal, I think that the value that they would get for him in return is really good. So I think they've kind of reset their clock as far as what they need to do organizationally, and I think they have created an asset by signing him.
What do you make of the – I mean, I hear teams all the time talk about how, well, we're going to rebuild, but we're not going to bottom out. You know, the Clippers just recently said something along those lines. It never seems to work. Like, Houston is, like, the one team I think it did work at, where they transitioned kind of from, what was it, like, Steve Francis and Yao to the next group with Tracy. And it just seems like you're trying awful hard to be, like, the 9 seed or, at best, like, the 8 seed there.
Right. Well, so, all right, so the East, is, as you and I well know, isn't great.
Right.
There's opportunity there.
Could be like a 37-win team at the 8 seed.
It could be.
Very easily.
And then you think about a club like Indiana, and, you know, you and I know well enough that just because one thing happens to one team in one year does not mean that it's automatically going to happen to another team the next. But the Pacers coming into last year had lost their star, Paul George, and Vegas had them at 31 wins. They get Victor Oladipo, who had upside, but nobody had him marked down as, mm-hmm. you know, the next superstar, and he explodes. They finish one game behind the Cavs for fifth. They push the Cavs to a seventh game in the first round. Nobody saw that coming. So in Cleveland, they've kind of kept their veterans. They've got this Colin Sexton, and you got a player in Rodney Hood, and I just – please, you listeners, don't mistake me for saying that Rodney is the next Victor Oladipo, because he's probably not. But Rodney does have a ton of talent, a ton of upside. He's better than the player he showed that he was here in Cleveland with LeBron. So what if he gets really good? What if he goes from a career 14 or 15 point score to a 21 or 22 point score? Well, now you got something. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. But the second thing with this is, the Cavs studied this. They've been studying it since before LeBron left, about how it goes for teams that tank, how it goes for teams that don't. And the thing that they found about being able to successfully maneuver a tank is you need luck. Okay, this is an organization that doesn't really have a ton of that. Mm. You know, I think for every Philadelphia out there who has successfully managed it, there are five or six examples where it's been a disaster. I mean, if you look at Orlando, Atlanta's been rough. You look at the Kings, the Bulls, you know, it just go on and on. The Knicks.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, it just hasn't worked out. So, you know, so there's plus sides to both, and I just think having done it once, that they wanted to try and go in a different direction.
Sexton's interesting. I went from draft night to some of our college guys on our draft show were not sure he'd even be a starter in this league. Then I watch him in summer league, and I mean, not to overreact to summer league, because that happens, but I mean, he looks like he plays with confidence at the very least, and that's something for a point guard.
Yeah, he plays with confidence. I'm starting to get the sense that from a competitor, he's kind of mean. Which is good, right? He's 19 years old. No one knows what that's like. The Cavs don't have any experience, certainly this group, really, of coaching a player like that at this stage. He's 19. Colin certainly has no experience on the NBA level. And it's been a long time since even, like, players have been with a guy that young in some cases. So, It's hard to see how this is going to go this year with him. He's very fast. We know that. We saw that in a scrimmage at Wright Pat Air Force Base the other day. But how his jumper translates, how much he has in the tank in February when he's already eclipsed his college season, those will be some early things to watch for.
What do you think this year's going to be like for Kobe Altman? We talked about jettison contracts, but does he look to move JR, to move Tristan Thompson, to move off those? Does he look to add pieces to get this team into the playoffs, come hell or high water? What do you think his mindset's going to be just for this season?
I think I think that all options are on the table for him, and he's kind of already expressed that. He proved that if he's put in a position where he feels like he has to make drastic changes to the roster even quickly, he can and will do it. He did that last year. But this is going to be, I think it's going to be a feeling out process. How do they do in the first 20 games? Are they going to be in this thing? that sort of thing. I think with the names you mentioned, JR and Tristan, especially with JR, there really isn't a market for him. Mm. They have a log GM at kind of the 2-3 spot, and you're looking at a situation where either a veteran like JR or Kyle Korver isn't going to get a chance to play very much, or a player that the front office has invested a lot in, Jedi Osman, he would be the odd man out. And right now that's not happening. So you'd like to see them make a move. I think they could get more value for Korver. They want a first-round pick for him.
Everybody wants first-round picks these days.
That's
those
right.
are becoming more and more difficult to procure in these deals. Are you going to miss working into June in the last 4 years?
Well, you know, my hope is that I'll still be busy then doing something for The Athletic, but
just not those Cleveland to Oakland flights.
That's right. Well, I guess. But even then, if you look at it, you know, the finals are going to be in Oakland. Mm-hmm. So if I'm fortunate enough for this company to send me there, I'd still be making that flight. But I think,
true.
But more to the point, it would be you wouldn't have sort of like the pressure of being on the beat, like being the beat guy at a finals, which is just a tremendous amount of work. Mm-hmm. So I'll either have my feet up golfing, you know, on the porch, or I'll be working from a totally different angle than I ever have before.
Well, I mean, probably Boston, Oakland, right? I'm like 15 wins for the Celtics away from just declaring the finals to be Boston,
good.
Oakland.
They are, boy, I mean, the Celtics look so good.
Yeah.
They, you know, I know it's October. There's a lot that can happen, but I mean, they were on the brink last year without literally their two best players, and so it should be really fun to be around the Celtics this year.
Lastly, on the Cavs, Dan Gilbert, is he? Do you get the sense he's on board with whatever, you know, giving Kobe Altman, you know, the enough of a leash to kind of rebuild this team? Same thing with Ty Lue. Where's he at with all this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Dan. Dan. How do I say it? Like, the Cavs, of course, are not Dan's major money driver, right? Like, it's something that he's very much invested in, and it's something that he cares deeply about, but it's something that he also feels like he can experiment with. So he wants Kobe to try new and different things. He's okay with building the roster in a different way, and certainly Dan has signed off on this idea of not going into full-blown tank. Yeah. I think he's in. You know, people talk about Dan selling the team all the time, but the fact remains is this team is worth a lot less now than it was last year, 2 years ago. So I think his time to get out would have been then. So I think he's in it. I think he's going to watch and hope that they pull something off here and can stay relevant. Mm.
Joe, appreciate it, man. Good luck with The Athletic this year, and I'm a subscriber, so look forward to reading, my friend.
Thanks for helping me keep the lights on.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Tim Bontemps and Joe Varden for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.